You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Finally, indeed, LA has reopened, and so have its dance floors.
So Steven Budisca, born and raised in Monterey Park, now living in Culver City. I am 28 years old. Finally getting out of my COVID cave. It's been a pretty rough year. I manage a hospital, so being able to be out in public, it's been a journey.
Steven Budisca was hanging out at the newly returned dance party, a club called Ronda at Los Globos in Silver Lake. Its founders have been throwing fabulously inclusive discos for 13 years now, featuring international DJs, drag queens, and a sweaty safe haven in the LA club scene.
Honestly, I can't even remember the last time I went out before tonight. So I came here with my friends. This was their first time coming out to Ronda, and they're having the time of their life. I just needed a breather.
Ronda bills itself as a pansexual party palace. Amid the smoke machines and strobe lights, clubbers dance in sequined bodysuits, day-glow wigs, and leather harnesses. Above them, neon signs spell out passion, pleasure, possibility. In a fur-lined lounge space, a post-pandemic addition to the signage reads, "Still here." The night is sold out, and the energy in this room is at 11, and that's why promoters are talking about a renaissance for LA nightlife. Could this be the biggest year ever for LA's club scene? KCRW's Andrea Dominic hit the scene and tells us what we can hope for. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, Steve. Great to be here.
Sounds like Club Ronda was a lot of fun. A big hit, huh?
You know, it really was. It was my first time out at a proper indoor event. And I have to admit, I was a little nervous between, social anxiety and rising COVID cases. But it was a blast. The second I walked in, I was hit with this palpable sense of joy and excitement, and you really couldn't help but catch it. People were dressed, or maybe I should say undressed, to the nines.
My name is Alana, a.k.a. Catherine Elizabeth Cromwell, with an extra L at the end for good wealth. You know, I'm a unicorn, so anything I touch or think of, it's just going to be iconic. I am giving a bustier, skin tight leather distress with Dow's Kill go-go boots with butterflies on it, and to top it off with a little bit of Diana Ross for the hair.
Yes, the looks were fierce indeed. Everyone was dancing without masks. It would have been way too hot not to. It was sweaty. Strangers were hugging and talking to each other. Natalie, a club goer I met with fabulous makeup, ended up covering my friend in body glitter.
I feel like I'm going out more than I was pre-COVID, and I'd say the energy is just like so much better. Like, I was dancing by myself for 2 hours and like received nothing but support from those around me, and it was just so sweet. I feel like pre-COVID I would have gotten like hit on and touched and groped, like, and that was not happening here.
I do want to point out that it's not like no one is thinking about COVID being a problem anymore, especially as we're seeing rates spiking amongst younger people. One of the co-founders of Ronda even tweeted last week about how he was seeing all of his unvaccinated friends getting sick, and even some of his vaccinated friends, and was urging people to get vaccines before going out.
Andrea, were they asking for vax cards, or were they doing any kind of checks like that there?
No, not when I got there, though some of the people I talked with said that they wish they had.
But that's not keeping people at home, right?
No, definitely not. I mean, demand has been huge. Everyone has been selling out. Promoters are competing for DJ bookings, and some are even launching additional nights to meet demand. At least for now, it's stoking a renewed sense of healthy competition in the business. For example, when I talked to Andy Crenshaw, she helps run the popular Dirty Bird series of events and festivals in Southern California. She said her team is rushing like crazy to get tickets on sale for an event they're throwing in August in Expo Park here in LA.
We knew that actually more stuff is coming this week, you know, on sale. So we definitely rushed and pushed as quickly as we can with like a new ticketing platform to get everything up and going. And I think it really helped us and worked to our advantage to get those tickets up first. But yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
It sounds like there's this roaring 20s momentum, you know, that's what we've heard, that after the pandemic, here we come roaring back, kind of like in the last century, and not just a return, by the way, to the way things were before. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure. The promoters I spoke with talked about the pandemic being this real kind of incubation period for nightlife to reevaluate their priorities, what kind of experience they want to be giving to people. Others have also used the pandemic to kind of reflect on how to better serve and preserve not just the business of nightlife, but its communities. A couple of promoters actually opened a new record store and community space called Chapter One in a former church downtown. And the cool thing about it is that it's curated according to different party crews and scenes in Los Angeles rather than genres, as a way to kind of centralize and preserve the city's otherwise pretty disparate nightlife communities. And they'll also be doing cool things like hosting parties, discussions, workshops, other events. I talked to one of the founders, his name's Rolando Alvarez, and he told me they want it to be one way to bolster and kind of pandemic-proof the scene towards a more thriving future.
This break was really good for a lot of us to assess what we were doing right and what we were doing wrong, right? We have been sort of hibernating and sort of just waiting for this moment, right? And it's just going to be like, if you will, our summer of love, right? Because I think a lot of us are going to be more driven to daytime events and to outdoor events, no matter what happens.
That is for sure. Outdoor events with bigger production value are already ramping up in a big way. And that's also being helped by both a bigger appetite for it and by kind of a loosening of event permits given out by the city. We're already seeing the Dirty Bird event in Expo Park I mentioned earlier, as well as an upcoming series in Chinatown Plaza and Pershing Square from a group called Future Primitive, and more on the way. Adam Gold from that group, Future Primitive, said they're looking forward to using their outdoor events downtown as an opportunity to kind of reclaim the city's urban spaces and architecture.
You know, it's kind of like opposite of how you would think of Los Angeles. You know, everyone's like, oh, everything's far away and you got to like jump in your car. Like, you can take the train down, walk right into Pershing Square and be in the middle of like this really cool, like outdoor block party. So trying to bring a little bit of that like European sensibility in, but like amp up the production decor markedly.
So just how big is all this going to get?
That all depends on how the next few months go with COVID and whether people are rushing out because they felt stuck before and then are just going to go back to the sweatpants and Netflix routine. Here's Richie Panic from Underground Promoters Lights Down Low.
I think there'll be some sort of reevaluation in like 6 months or so. You know what I mean? Do people want to just finally like embrace fun and embrace their freer sides and constantly get weird? Or were people like, I got it out of my system and now I kind of want to go back?
In the meantime, we are in this roaring 20s or summer of love mentality. And there's really a renewed sense of community and togetherness that people want to support and dance floors they want to hit. Here's Rolando Alvarez again.
Everyone is just so excited to be back, just like Miami. They are having such a renaissance right now. I mean, they are just like booming. And I honestly believe that LA is going to follow. We are going to see an explosion or amazing events, not necessarily just in music, but all of the above.
It sounds like there is so much happening, you know, stuff that's palpable, that, you know, people have been cooped up for such a long time and it's really starting to explode this summer. So I want to thank you, Andrea. By the way, you've got a story, right, at KCRW.com, a full feature story with pictures, everything else, right?
I sure do. It gives you a little bit of a deeper look into the folks I talk to and my night out at Rhonda.
All right. Andrea Dominic, digital producer of music and culture for KCRW. Andrea, thanks.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Well, one Angelino who won't be hitting LA's nightclubs much longer, Eric Garcetti. Last week, the White House announced that President Joe Biden has nominated LA's mayor to be the next U.S. ambassador to India. The news came with little surprise. It's been reported for several months now that he was first in line for that job. But now that his nomination is official, the scramble to replace him, assuming he is confirmed, begins. John Regardi's a writer and reporter for Los Angeles Magazine, where he's been covering this. Hey, John.
Hey, Steve.
And Gloria Molina is former L.A. City Council member, former L.A. County Supervisor as well. Gloria, welcome to you.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure.
I really appreciate it. John, I'm going to start with you because the mayor must still get confirmed by the Senate, the United States Senate. He's been in hot water lately with a couple of scandals in his administration. A former aide accused of sexual harassment during his time in office. The accusation is that Garcetti knew. Of course, Garcetti says he did not. His chief of staff was suspended after mocking labor activist Dolores Huerta on Facebook. Do you think that could affect his confirmation?
You know, it certainly raises a lot of attention and questions, but one also has to think that the presidential administration is not going to go forward with this nomination unless they are highly certain that they are going to be able to get this through. So, you know, let's assume that there have already been back channel talks. Will Mayor Garcetti be questioned intensely by Republicans throughout the process? Most likely, yes. But again, one probably has to assume that it's seen that the roadmap for getting him approved, confirmed, is ultimately clear.
I mean, it is a very thin margin in the Senate, as you know. Let's assume he does get confirmed, though. What happens when the mayor steps down? I mean, will the city then appoint an interim mayor? Would that normally be the city council president?
Well, this is where things get really, really interesting, Steve. Now, you do hear a lot of talk these days, as you just referenced, about how Nuri Martinez, who's the council president, would normally take over as acting mayor. The city charter holds that the council president takes over when the mayor travels out of California, but that's also usually seen as a short-term solution, something not intended to be in place for what could be almost a full year, if not longer. So the council would have the option then, you know, of appointing some sort of, interim mayor, some sort of caretaker mayor. And again, you know, this is not going to be over, you know, a week or 2 weeks or a month. Expect this process to take several months. So there's going to be plenty of time for the city council to figure out, okay, how do we want to fill this void?
Yeah, it doesn't help that there are a couple of city council members who want the job, right? Who want the job permanently, not just on a need basis. I'm talking about Joe Buscaino. I'm talking about Nuri Martinez. I mean, Nuri Martinez is the council president, right? So wouldn't she have a leg up on getting the nod?
Absolutely. And, you know, and this is so complicated. It's great that you mentioned that because, yeah, again, we do have this mayoral election taking place next year with the primary in June and the runoff in November. And, you know, essentially because, you know, in addition to those individuals who you mentioned, city attorney Mike Fuhrer is already in the mayor's race. And there are thoughts the two other council members, Mark Ridley Thomas and Kevin DeLeon, also want to run for mayor. The last thing any of these individuals are going to want is for someone else to get a leg up by serving as acting mayor. So there's going to be lots of efforts to ensure that, you know, that the person who, you know, so that if an interim mayor is installed, that that person is not going to run for mayor. Now, by the way, this is tricky. This has happened before. In San Francisco in 2011, Ed Lee was installed as a caretaker mayor after Gavin Newsom became lieutenant governor. Lee had promised not to run for mayor. Then he found out that he liked the job, shocked everyone by announcing he would run, and a couple months later, he won, became mayor of San Francisco. So there's going to be a lot of things at play here in Los Angeles as decisions are made in terms of who could potentially be an interim mayor.
Gloria Molina, you served on the city council. Assuming the council does appoint an interim replacement, who do you think is the ideal candidate?
Well, I think that it's an opportunity for the city council and for our city to really look at a leader who can really do the job. Being elected is very, very different than someone who is serving in a role to get the work done. There are so many people who are influencing every single decision that people who are running for office, regrettably, need to please everyone, and so consequently no decisions are well made. So I really think it's an opportunity for the city council to look at this in a much broader sense other than, you know, about me getting elected, and look at an opportunity to bring in someone who really could do the job, provide the kind of leadership, put up with all of the influencers that we have out there, all the lobbyists, all the special interests, and really start tackling some of the issues that need to be done, everything from police reform to homelessness and other issues. You need a problem solver. And right now, the last thing that we need is someone who, instead of working on the issues that are significant to the city is running for office at the same time while they're trying to serve as interim mayor. So it would be a mistake for the city council to select anyone who is going to be a candidate.
John Regardi, what names are being floated?
Oh, no, there certainly are a few of them who are out there. As Gloria says, you know, it's a question of, you know, unelectability, is out there. One of the ones who you hear mentioned frequently is the former mayor, Antonio Villarigosa, because he could not be elected mayor again. I believe there are questions as to whether it's allowed, but he is someone who certainly has the gravitas and knows the job. As well, you hear the name of former city controller and mayor candidate Wendy Gruhl, and she obviously certainly knows how Los Angeles works. You also hear Paul Krikorian. He's a council member, mentioned as well. It's been indicated that he would not, be interested in running for mayor. And again, that would be something that everyone who would install an interim mayor wants to happen. But, those are three of the names, who you hear mentioned. Certainly there's probably others being kicked around as well. But really, I think it's going to be so important. And Gloria did a great job of running down some of just these really key characteristics, because the next mayor is going to come in, or the next interim mayor will come in and have so many of these crucial, issues that just need to be tackled, including budget, including homelessness, including police reform. It's going to be a tough job, and finding an interim mayor, you're not going to be able to satisfy everyone.
Gloria Molina, do any of those names check boxes for you?
Well, certainly Antonio is probably the safest from the standpoint of not running against any of the others. And I know that he's capable of making the tough decisions. But there are other people who are problem solvers out there that could do the job. I hesitate to mention them because I'm going to get in trouble with a couple of other folks that I know. But I think there are folks out there. And hopefully the biggest issue is whether the city council is going to be willing to make a decision like this.
John, is there a timeline, assuming Garcetti's confirmation goes smoothly? When do you expect him to step away?
Again, it's certainly not going to be in the near term. One can probably expect it to be several months, fall, perhaps late fall, perhaps even early 2022 if necessary. So, all of that will, once again, allow plenty of time to select someone who could be interim mayor or a caretaker position for that. This is not going to be suddenly next week, oh, we got to fill this void. Nope, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Gloria Molina, I mean, what's Garcetti's legacy, for better or for worse? What's he going to be remembered for during his? I mean, he served as mayor for at least 8 years.
I think everyone likes Garcetti. I know I do. And I think when you talk to him and you meet with him, he is someone who, besides being a very charming man, he's really capable of convincing you that he's doing the work on these issues. Unfortunately, he has had such strong criticisms that people have had, and I think he's had a lot of issues within. I don't think he has the kind of staff, the secondary backups that he needs in order to be part of the problem solvers. Again, but I think he's always going to be remembered as someone who was very likable, who was a good leader at the time. I don't think people are going to have really negative things to say. There's going to be some special interests that are always going to point to something that they wanted that they didn't get, that they think they should have gotten. But that's the nature of our political arena here.
He got booed at Dodger Stadium not too long ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds to me like some people aren't so,
But I tell you, anybody who goes to Dodger Stadium, and I know I've been out there, and as a politician, when you get introduced, they're like, hey, we're not interested in you. Bring out the Dodgers, right? And so you can easily get booed at Dodger Stadium. So I wouldn't take that into account as much.
Former city council member, county supervisor Gloria Molina, John Regardi, reporter for Los Angeles Magazine. Thanks to you both.
Certainly.
Thank you, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
All right, we're moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. Steve Chiotakis here. If you're arrested for a felony in the state of California, the law says you have to give a sample of your DNA. But things in that realm are a little different in Orange County. In OC, minor misdemeanors like walking your dog without a leash can result in you giving up your DNA. That's because of a program started under the OC's former district attorney, Tony Rakakis, and now is continuing under the current DA, Todd Spitzer. It's also being challenged in court. LA Times columnist Gustavo Arellano is here with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So apparently this DNA collection program is locally, is locally known as Spit and Acquit. Tell us more about it.
It's exactly what it sounds like. Say you commit a misdemeanor, something like walking your dog without a leash, DUI, something like even like an infraction, and you go to court and you're like, okay, I'm just gonna have to pay a fine. It sucks, but whatever. Well, in recent years, ever since 2007, when this program started, prosecutors would go like, say, hey, it's not that simple, but we'll wipe out all the charges if you just give us a sample of your DNA. And most people, they're, you know, they don't want to go to court. They don't want to go through multiple days and all of that stuff. And they'll say, okay, you just need my DNA. I just need a spit and you'll acquit. Sure, I'll do it.
I mean, how big is this DNA database?
182,000 people have taken that, which is bigger than some county DNA or state DNA databases when it comes to felonies. But hey, this is Orange County. I know it sounds like, you know, Mayberry RFD or the Andy Rooney show with Barney Fife saying, hey, you want to spit in this cup and I'll let it go away. But obviously civil libertarians have been staring at this with aghast for over 15 years.
Well, I mean, and a lawsuit was filed back in February by a couple of UC Irvine law professors. What do they say in their lawsuit?
Oh, this is completely unconstitutional. It's a waste of taxpayer money, and it's just an abomination to justice. This idea that the Orange County District Attorney's Office can have the secretive DNA, which, by the way, doesn't connect with other databases in the United States, because other databases would laugh at the idea of getting this DNA off of misdemeanors. So they're telling the court that this should be outlawed, this should be kicked out, and all this DNA should be dropped.
I mean, I mentioned walking your dog, right? Misdemeanor. That's an example that one of the professors, William Thompson, brings up. What happened in that case? This is from an article in The Intercept, right?
Yeah, so William Thompson's a professor emeritus at UCI School of criminologist at UCI, so he's retired. And a friend of his, literally in Irvine, which, by the way, they'll give you a ticket if you have the wrong type of car. Take it from someone who's had that ticket, by the way. She was walking the dog without a leash. She goes to the to the court, and she's confronted with multiple days and probably, you know, having to hire a lawyer, or you just give this DNA sample. So even though she didn't want to give the DNA sample, she just felt she had no choice, because otherwise it was going to be a huge inconvenience to her life.
Todd Spitzer is Orange County's district attorney right now. As I mentioned, it began under Rakakis. But Spitzer was a critic of the program when he was running to replace Rakakis. What does he say now about the database?
Oh, he's saying it's wonderful and you need it to crack down on crime and to keep communities safe, which is incredible if you think about it, because Todd Spitzer forever ruthlessly savaged Tony Rakakis over everything, alleged he was corrupt, and that's how he campaigned and ended up winning over a snitch scandal. And as supervisor, as you said, Spitzer openly criticized this DNA program when it was approved throughout the time, and all of a sudden he found religion on it. I don't know, Todd, what happened?
You know, the woman walking her dog, Gustavo, I mean, she's not exactly posing a risk to public safety, right? So, I mean, isn't the point of a DNA database to capture people who, you know, could be dangerous, capture the DNA of people who could be dangerous to make sure that they don't do anything like that again, or at least have them in a database?
Todd's thinking is the same that Tony Rakakis had, which is like, well, if you commit a misdemeanor, you're most likely one day probably going to commit a felony. And when you commit that felony, you might try to disappear. And at least now we have your DNA to be able to match it. It's really specious thinking, but hey, it's Orange County justice for you.
Now, Spitzer, for his part, says that there have been some big cases that have been solved using the database. Is that true? Is he telling the truth?
That's what he says. So, and he's offered some cases as proof of that. But again, does that really justify 182,000 people who committed misdemeanors putting their spit into a database and Todd having, the OCDA having this DNA program for themselves and themselves alone? Todd, for years, campaigned on this idea of him being on the side of justice, on the side of the law. But a lot of critics are saying that's the antithesis of being for justice.
Who controls all this DNA information before we let you go?
OCDA, Todd Spitzer. He's the one who could plug in, see whatever he needs, give it to his prosecutors, do whatever needs to be possible to be able to get people that, convicted or whatnot. But again, is it really worth it making people jump through hoops just because they say, because they got a misdemeanor? No, Todd should be focusing on going after actual felons who commit felonies as opposed to people who committed misdemeanors and maybe one day probably won't commit any felonies.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist of the LA Times. Of course, he's here every week for KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, meet a high school skateboarder from Southern California who's headed to the Olympics. She is 17 years old, and yeah, she's that good. Join us for all of our episodes of GLA by subscribing to the podcast. Check out the stories of the day. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us how we're doing at kcrw.com/greaterLA. And get that podcast delivered fresh to your feed on the regular, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Thank you so much for being with us. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on today's show. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your ears and for your time. Have a great night.